Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
All right, we're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, text him in. 710-710 is our text number. We'll try to get to your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So Julio Jones is a big topic of discussion, obviously, because the reports over the weekend that the Seahawks have had a conversation, perhaps, with the Falcons, that Russell Wilson and Julio have spoken about playing with each other. As Dave and I were talking about it and just looking at the reality of it, though, the financial hoops they'd have to go through to make that happen, the draft capital that they don't have this upcoming season. What's the reality?
None. I mean, it's just, you know, one thing we understand is that John Schneider is going to keep in touch on just about any deal possible. That's the due diligence of the general manager. He does this all the time. And so would he make contact? Yeah. I mean, like, for example, he was taking calls on Russell Wilson trade, but he wasn't going to trade him just because, again, it's like, okay, somebody may make an offer that might be so ridiculous that you take it, but in the end, you know, they'd have to rebuild for 2 or 3 years. There's so many problems right now on the Julio Jones front coming to Seattle. First off, they've got $6.8 million of cap room right now, and he has a $15.3 million base salary, okay? That's not going to fit. Then, you know, you can say that, this kind of goes back to the Percy Harvin type of thing. If you bring in Julio Jones, who makes is on a $22 million a year contract, and most likely he's not going to take a pay cut, then all of a sudden you may anger some of the receivers in the locker room. Like, for example, how's Tyler Lockett going to feel now that he's going to be the number two paid wide receiver? And then the other aspect is it creates the potential problem down the line, because next year DK Metcalf can start talking contract extension. And you know that he's going to probably say, well, if you're paid $22 million for Julio Jones and the cap goes up like this, I can ask for 25. So that's got to be a concern. So in the end, it's good to check it out. I mean, you've got pretty much every team in this division checking him out. But the reality is the Rams don't have the cap room. Arizona could do it if they make a couple adjustments. But the team that may have the best chance of doing it, San Francisco, because they have the cap room and they have the interest. But again, I don't see Julio Jones coming here whatsoever. And then the other part you can add to this is that if you trade and get Julio Jones, you just wasted Wayne Eskridge and his draft choice in the second round, because it's like, okay, so now you put a second rounder in, and at the very best he's going to be the fourth best wide receiver, and he's hardly going to get on the field.
Well, and then, you know, you probably mentioned it, but the triple-digit attempts or as far as targets go,
right?
I mean, how are you going to spread that around? And I get the feeling that, you know, look, it's not going to go back to, you know, the Stone Ages, but Pete wants to get back to running the ball, right?
Right.
And so why in the world, if you had, I was saying this, John, if I was going to make a move like this for a veteran, pay that much money, I'd get a center. I would make that's the one position I think. I mean, we don't know about corner. We don't know about edge rusher. You know, it's going to be competitive out there, but as far as just one single position, they look pretty good and pretty competitive at every one, except for, you know, you could argue center. Would that be, would you agree with that? Or
yeah, I mean, position? I think they can get by at center, but I think it'd be nice if there's going to be an acquisition to maybe see if you can get more of experience of a center to compete against Ethan Posick, or to be there in case Ethan gets hurt. So it's like, yeah, I think that would be more important, because, you know, you think about this and, you know, say what you want. I know the team was owned while he was alive by Paul Allen, who was one of the richest owners in sports. It's now Jody Allen's running the team. But say what you want, there's a budget there. And if you pick up $15.3 million for a wide receiver after paying over $17 million for Tyler Lockett and still wanting to do something with Jamal Adams, where do you think that puts that budget?
Over.
Over. And, you know, I mean, certainly Jody can grant that. But also, is it going to make the team that much better? Hey, Julio Jones is a great receiver, but he is 32, and he's starting to get injuries, and he may be slowing down a bit. You know, it's like he can still help a team out, but, I mean, if he comes here, he's probably not the number one receiver. He's probably number three, because you've got Metcalf, and you've got Tyler Lockett. So it's like, hey, it's great to explore, it's great to study and all that stuff. I don't think it's going to be great, the deal is going to happen, but also something's going to happen here pretty fast.
So the fear is that he lands on the 49ers roster or maybe the Rams or what's the reality of those situations or the Titans, another team we've heard about? Where do you think he lands and who's financially in a position that they need him and they can make it work?
49ers have the best chance, I think, you know, because they've got well enough cap room to take on the 15.3. I think they were like $18 million under the cap. Rams have no chance. I mean, their cap is so strapped right now that you know, they struggle to even sign their draft choices. You know, Arizona, they got $13 million of cap room, so they could make the move. But again, hey, they made the trade last year for you know, getting DeAndre Hopkins, and that turned out to be a great deal. But then when you look at the Rams and you look at San Francisco, they don't have first-round picks in the next 2 years. Seattle doesn't have a first-round pick next year. If you're San Francisco, and again, I think that could be the team he's going to go to. It makes the most sense that it's still going to leave you draft-weary coming up. And again, it's like maybe they can replace something next year for Jimmy Garoppolo, but it's not going to be a first-round pick. As far as Tennessee, they've got cap problems. I mean, again, they still got cap room, but not that kind of room that they could take on 15-3. And I know that Julio can restructure his contract, but knowing what this is all about, I can't see him taking a pay cut.
Well, and John, look, no disrespect to Julio Jones, obviously. I mean, he's a fantastic player, but I mean, he's going into, this will be, what, his 11th year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if he goes to San Francisco, I know a lot of fans were, like, all freaked out about that. But I'm like, it's still Jimmy Garoppolo throwing him the ball.
Right.
He still has to get it there. So, you know, I mean, Julio Jones has kind of been the gold standard for receivers as far as big, you know, physical guys like DK Metcalf. But, you know, I guess it just doesn't, you know, I don't think you need to freak out or panic if you're a fan of the Seahawks or anybody else in the division just because the 49ers have them.
Yeah, but again, it's like there's no question he's going to make the 49ers better. But think about what they'll have for pass catchers. You know, they'll have George Kittle as probably the best tight end we've seen in a while. We'll see how Kyle Pitts does in Atlanta. Then they've got Deebo Samuel. I mean, Deebo over there, and he's a real good one. Brandon Ayuk, who looks like a very promising first-round pick from a year ago, and Julio Jones. It's like, uh-oh. Now, it's like they're going to go three receivers. And although the weird part is, and that's the thing that also kind of makes it curious, they like to be a two-back offense. Because one of the things that Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay like, they like that extra guy who can block. And so that's why Kyle Juszczyk is so important for the running back and being in the backfield. So that means that he'll be on the field less. That may not be good. And they just gave him a contract extension. And in the case of the Rams, you know, they don't really have right now a good second tight end, but also they just don't have the cap room to be able to get something done.
Again, if you guys have questions for John, you can text him into 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. We'll try to get to some of your questions that don't involve Julio Jones. Most of those questions coming in initially, John, were about Julio and restructure Bobby, restructure Russell. They can make this happen, make that happen. So we'll get into some other questions if you guys got them. 710-710 is the text number. As far as this date goes, John, I feel like we've all been pointing to June 1st. June 1st is coming, and that's when it's less punitive financially for teams to make deals. And people point to the Packers as you know, start number one, where, you know, they were going to be on the hook for $38 million for Aaron Rodgers before if they traded him. Now it's 21 or something along those lines. So in reality, do we see a frenzy of moves? Do we see just a trickle of moves here? What's going to happen now that June 1st is here?
No, you're going to see some moves because, again, you know, you've got four teams right now that are so tight against the cap they haven't even signed a draft choice. Atlanta being one of those with less than $300,000 of cap room. I mean, Philadelphia has a tight cap. They haven't signed anybody. Chicago has a tight cap. They haven't signed anybody as far as their draft choices. And New Orleans hasn't signed anybody either. And so you're going to see moves coming from those teams. Like, you know, we already know that Weston Richburg, the center from San Francisco, he's going to retire. Drew Brees is going to retire. Then, you know, we already know that, you know, they did some June 1st casualties as far as Charles Leno with Washington, Alshon Jeffrey and Malik Collins in Philadelphia. So we'll see those moves and they'll be out there. You know, we already know that Kyle Rudolph He was a June 1st casualty, but he's at the New York Giants right now. So there'll be plenty of moves. And again, you know, teams, because if there's only 11 teams right now, like in the case of just going back a little bit to Julio Jones, that would have cap room enough to be able to put in $15.3 million. So that means that, you know, you got to clear up some cap. You know, you still have, I think 104 draft choices to still sign. Seattle, of course, has all theirs done. And so, you know, you've got to try to manage the cap and do all these different things and see if there's some players you can add.
All right, sorry, one more Julio question because somebody asked. Is there friction between Julio Jones and Matt Ryan that you know of?
I think there is. And again, I can't verify this, but...
Because, you know, when he was like, hey, I'm out of here, when he told Shannon Sharp that, it was obviously there was something.
Yeah, I think what it came down to, from what I'm hearing, and I don't know if it's a matter of he's mad at Matt Ryan or he's mad at the organization. I think he's more mad at the organization, is because when they came back and they gave, you know, the big contract again to Matt Ryan, he was upset about that. But of course, I don't understand why he should be so upset because, you know, he's one of the top three paid wide receivers in football. I mean, because he's got $22 million a year, but I guess he was upset that they didn't come to him for even more money. So it's almost like a DeAndre Hopkins type of thing in Houston where it's like, I want more money and I'm not getting more money. I want out of here. And so it's like, to me, it's kind of bizarre because you say what you want through the years. Since Arthur Blank's owned this team and Matt Ryan has been the quarterback and Julio Jones has been the best receiver, he's always taken care of those two guys. And he certainly took care of them on the last contract when he got him $22 million a year. But I don't know if the friction is more. I know it's about Matt Ryan. I just don't know if it totally involves Matt Ryan personally.
710-710 is the Mac and Jack's text line for your questions. We'll get into some of those here in just a moment. John, as far as other moves being made out there, I was reading a story last night about, you know, some of the bigger names that are still out there, and I can't remember, it might have been Barnwell from ESPN, predicting where some of these names would go. And Richard Sherman, he was predicting a one-year, $4 million deal with the 49ers. Do you see him going back there and for that amount of money? I know that, you know, teams can free up some money now that it's June 1st, but what do you think the likelihood is for him?
It could happen. I wouldn't guarantee it. I mean, because I think they're reasonably seemingly feeling good about the, you know, the cornerback position. I mean, Jason Verrett took a discounted deal. I know that Quan Williams took a discounted deal. So, it's over $2.3 million, but, you know, and he's one of the better slot cornerbacks in the league. And so, you know, $4 million might be a little bit to the angry side of some of those guys who have taken big discounts to keep everything together. So, you know, it may still be tough, but, I mean, somehow, some way, some team needs to sign him.
All right, John, the weekly, well, we almost do it daily. The KJ question now. Anything we 206?
Nope.
Because, yeah, and then...
It's right now KO on KJ because no offer, nothing close to happening. You know, they still have the... Even though they're going to continue to talk and try to... You know, they'll talk if they need to every day with KJ just to kind of keep him in the loop. But the fact that you now have Cody Barton as a possible starter on the strong side, and the strong side may only be out there for like 25, 30 plays... because you know that Jordan Brooks is going to take over the weak side. Then you have Daryl Taylor and Benson Mayoa as possibilities to be able to play some strong side linebacker. You know, right now, they don't seem to show the urgency to try to do something with KJ, so he just waits.
I would think if KJ did get re-signed here, first of all, it's going to be a minimum deal. Are we at that point with him?
They might do a little bit better than that, but you know, I think maybe it's like $2 million, $2.5 million at the most.
And then, you know, the other thing I always say, a lot of guys, if they're going to have to tuck their tail between their legs, they're not going to do it at the place, you know, here. They'll go somewhere else. But I don't think it's that kind of relationship with KJ.
I think it's – well, like, for example, it's like, okay, KJ was the player rep last year, right? Mm-hmm. And so – and he did a great job, you know, kept the team together, showed great leadership. And, you know, Richard Sherman's on the executive committee, and Richard's certainly willing to come back. And so KJ certainly is willing to come back. I mean, the problem is that, you know, he didn't want to take a discounted deal, and this is going to be a discounted year. And so any veteran in their 30s was going to have a difficult time getting contracts.
John, the 253 is asking, any centers that you can think of that are going to be released that the Hawks should look at?
Released? Well, I mean, Weston Richburg is being released tomorrow, but he's retiring. at this stage, I can't think of a center right now that's going to be out there. I mean, again, the one that's still out there and it can probably be signed for the minimum is Austin Reeder from the Kansas City Chiefs. That's the one I think that they should strongly consider, because Austin Bly, who was the starting center in with the Rams, I mean, he ended up going to Kansas City and he took a minimum salary deal. So instead of giving the minimum salary to Reeder, and again, Reeder started. So it's like,
How old is he? Do you know?
Probably 27, 28.
Okay.
He's pretty young. I mean, you know, he's still in that, you know, 5-6 year window. So, you know, so he could be a possibility.
Hey, John, I'll answer my question, although I don't think they're a sleeper, but they're asking you, your early on sleeper team this year. I guess the Chargers aren't necessarily, are they sleepers?
Yeah, I think they're sleepers. Okay. I mean, I say
like the Chargers.
Yeah, the Chargers, the Denver Broncos.
Broncos?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I was going to go Indianapolis.
No, they're not a sleeper. I mean, I think right now they're the best team in the division. Remember, they won a wild card in 11 games last year.
You just don't think about Indianapolis that much.
They got Carson Wentz. Come on.
I know. Well, that makes them even more sleepy.
They got Mark Glowinski, so it's like
That's our guy. They got Glowinski.
And who will be the starting quarterback for the Broncos?
I think it's going to be Teddy Bridgewater until they get Aaron Rodgers, because I still think at some point they're going to get Aaron Rodgers.
You think he ends up in Denver?
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's the reason why they're your sleeper.
What would the timing be on that? Do you think it's before the season?
September or October.
Oh, so during the season.
Yeah,
So you see this, and somebody was asking I'll give you their words. 425. John, what's your best guess on the outcome of the Aaron Rodgers drama? So your prediction is he holds out?
Mm-hmm.
Through training camp, through preseason, through the first part of the regular season, mm-hmm. and then gets traded to Denver.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, for so many reasons. I think, you know, one, he definitely wants out of the Packers for what they did to him by taking Jordan Love. Secondly, his fiance is in Boulder, Colorado. Thirdly, I think that he realizes that the Broncos have John Elway, you know, in many ways running things. And as Peyton Manning learned, it's like, hey, I want to get together with a team that's run by a quarterback who's a Hall of Famer. And so it's like, because I can compare notes and basically can have my way. Because it's like, if Vic Fangio says, well, no, you can't do this, Aaron will just go to John and say, John, come on, be serious. Tell Vic to shut up. It's like,
I'll tell you what, if this happens, we're never going to hear the end of it from Clayton. Remember, I predicted that they were going to go, what is it, John, September?
September or October, yeah.
Okay.
I just follow the pattern of Carson Palmer when he did it in 2011, and it took until midseason before the Raiders lost a starting quarterback and they were able to make the trade. But I still think in the end, if he doesn't want to be in Green Bay, and he doesn't want to be in Green Bay, and you know, you notice there's nothing going on in the quarterback front other than they brought in some bad quarterbacks to kind of get things going, you know, so. I think he's out of there, and you know the best. And again, you still need the cap room to be able to do it. And Broncos have plenty of cap room. Like tomorrow, I think what are they like $20+ million of cap room? They get another $10 million from Juwan James.
Hmm. How do you think Jalen? We're going to talk to El Hombre today at 5 o'clock. How do you think Jalen Hurts is going to do this year?
Not well. And again, it's not because of Jalen Hurts. It's just because the team's so bad.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I spent the last 2-3 days working on updating salary cap stuff and kind of fine tuning some salary cap stuff, and you know, there was like 2 or 3 contracts that they did on replacement deals that I missed, and so they've got like $30-40 million in replacement deals, along with the fact they've got like $30+ million in dead money from the Carson Wentz trade. So, I think it's going to be a real tough season, but you know, it's not saying that, I mean, it's like, hey, that's like saying, well, Joe Burrow is terrible because the Bengals are terrible. No, he's good. It's just the team is bad. It's like saying that, well, I have no hope right now that they're going to do well with the New York Jets because they got Zach Wilson. Well, is Wilson going to be able to turn that team around in a year? Same thing as Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. Bad teams are bad teams. Go to Matthew Stafford and ask him about that.
John, the 541 asking, John, the Raiders, where do I begin? Is a playoff run possible the next 5 years?
No, it's possible, but I'm not optimistic because...
Over 5 years, you're not optimistic.
Well, because I don't know what their plan is. I mean, it's like every day they just do something different. You know, like, for example, they take a third-round pick on Bowden, the running back slash wide receiver. He's now in Miami, and they traded him. And then they come back, and they trade a draft choice to be able to get Kenyon Drake, and they're paying him $5.5 million when they got Josh Jones to be the backup. It's like, what are they doing? I mean, Jones is one of the better young backs in the league. So they trade a third-round pick. They, they bring in Drake. You know, they trade three starting offensive linemen. It's like, I don't get it. I mean, listen, I like John Gruden a lot. Worked with him for many, many years. I like Mike Mayock a lot. But it just doesn't seem like there's a plan.
All right, John, so on this day, anything that really stood out to you, the June 1st, looking at your database, a team that either did a really good job or a bad job as far as this date passing and some of the salary cap consequences?
Well, I'll tell you, the team, this doesn't involve anything on June 1st, but I know this is going to come out for the Washington Post tomorrow. I spent a whole bunch of time last week talking to Jason Light, their general manager, and he just did an incredible job with their cap guy and being able to keep that team together. I mean, think about the idea that they were tight against the cap, okay? They only had to redo three contracts. Donovan Smith, the left tackle, they got a concession from Tom Brady, and they did Cameron Brait, their backup tight end. They were able to get all their guys in. They were able to get 13 of their 23 unrestricted free agents done. And listen to this one. They didn't have to cut a player. They didn't cut a player. I mean, you know, normally to get some cap room, you have to cut somebody. They didn't cut anybody. That's remarkable. And so just an incredible job of doing it. And so, yeah, we went through. And think about this. You're sitting there 1 week after winning the Super Bowl. And Jason Light and the staff, you know, they're celebrating, obviously. And it's like, okay, how are we going to do this, keep this team together? Because they didn't know what the cap was going to be until a week before the start of free agency.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, there was a downside to yesterday's thrilling win for the Mariners. We'll tell you what we're talking about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk with the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley will join us as you guys look forward to that every single Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned. As we talked about, it was a great, great win yesterday. Extra innings. There was a lot of joy. There was a lot of mirth. A lot of celebration going on. Crazy eyes. The whole thing was happening yesterday after the extra innings win. But the downside was what we saw with Kyle Lewis. He's out. He's on the injured list. He's got what is being termed a small meniscus tear. And it's on the same knee. That's what bothers me. I mean, not that it's good to have it on another knee, but that's the one that had the huge injury to begin with that set him back in his career where he tore up that knee. Then he had the knee injury at the beginning of the year that kept him out from the start of the season, same knee. And then this small meniscus tear is on that same knee. So you're just wondering, is that going to become a chronic thing? Is it not ever going to be stable? Is it going to always be susceptible to being injured? Or, you know, you're somebody that's gone through a lot of knee injuries, Dave. Did you feel like that knee that you really tore up in college was more prone to being hurt or different injuries throughout your career?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, the thing is you end up working so hard on it that it ends up being your strong knee, you know. So, and sometimes guys will injure their other knee or their other ankle or whatever because they worked so hard on the other one or the injured one. So, and it is the same one, right? That you know, he got torn up, and I think that story was, did he run to the wall or when he originally heard it?
I think it was a play at the plate, I thought.
Oh, really?
I could have that wrong. I'll have to go back and look.
But, I mean, you know, look, I think especially in baseball, I mean, in football, you're just getting so much contact. So, yeah, you're always kind of worried about it, but you put so many hours into it that, you know, by the time you get there, it's like, hey, that's in the past. I'm not even thinking about it. And again, I think I ran my fastest 40 time after my injury. actually, is because I was working so hard. And so, yeah, that's the good news. I think he'll be okay. It's too bad because I thought he was going to make a spectacular catch. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like we talked about it in the first, you know, the opening segment, it kind of reminded me of that Tedrick Thompson interception that he thought he had. I'm trying to remember. I think it was against the Bengals. And, you know, he tried to time it and jump up and just missed it. And it was the same thing. But I think this was a much more difficult because it looked like it was one of those screaming line drives that kind of was sailing on him a little bit.
Right.
If he'd have taken just one more step. But, yeah, it just came down funny, and, you know, he was just kind of rubbing. I got the feeling that if it was, you know, Game 7 of the World Series, he would have stayed out there and been fine. But yeah. they finished the end.
They didn't yank him out of the game
right
there.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll see what goes on there. And, you know, I guess the upside to an extent, and we'll find out to what extent, is that Taylor Trammell's back, who's been on fire at the AAA level, and we'll see. What's funny is we were so used to seeing those numbers when he first got there, hitting 600 or 611 or whatever the heck it was, and now you're looking at it, he ended up hitting in his time there 384 with a 413 on base percentage. You go, oh, he cooled off a little bit, didn't he?
I was thinking the exact same thing because when I
only 384.
Yeah, when I opened the page, I expected to see like 600.
Yeah,
or maybe five if he cools off. Yeah, 384, not bad.
With a 413 on base percentage. Yeah, because at one point he was over 600 with an over 600 on base, which, you know, was a handful of games. So the numbers fluctuate wildly. But in 17 games with Tacoma, 384, 413. 1.139 OPS, 6 homers, 7 doubles, 3 steals.
And, you know, I was looking, 17 strikeouts, so that was a problem. He's at 73 at-bats. So, you know, it's less than 25% anyway. So at least, you know, it was up to 50 when he was up here.
Yeah, 41 strikeouts and 83 at-bats at the big league level. So that's a potential upside. We'll see what he does. We'll see. And Kelnick will play center field, not Trammell, is what it sounds like Service is saying. The only thing, we've got sound from Scott Service, who was on with Jake and Stacy. Jake and Stacy. And then he addressed the knee issue. Now, there's no real clarity as of now, but here's what he had to say about it at the time.
Hey, Lou, kind of a funky play yesterday. He was trying to run down that ball in the gap there in about the eighth inning and felt something in his knee when he landed, kind of jumped awkwardly for it. And so we took him out of the game right away, and he had that checked on this morning, very early MRI, and it was determined he does have a very small meniscus tear in his right knee. So I'm not exactly sure how long he's going to be out. Is it a scope type surgery thing? I'm not sure yet. We'll find out here more today.
You know, don't let the scope thing scare you too much, I would say, if you're a fan of Kyle Lewis, which we all are. But, you know, sometimes those things can be done pretty quickly. It's minimal as far as invasiveness goes. You just get like a little tiny hole in your, I mean, it's still, they're operating on you. It's still a major deal.
You're still getting knocked out for it, yeah.
Yeah, you are. But, you know, it's not like they're tearing him open and restructuring things and stuff like that. So, yeah, but you won't know until you get in there and see. I mean, they'll have a good idea. But, I mean, if they decide to, like, repair. That's what I had a doctor in Vail named Dr. Richard Stedman who just made my career. I mean, he saved me. I mean, he probably put, you know, 3-4 years on my career. But he would always try to sew the meniscus back together, mm-hmm. and rather than just ripping it out, because a lot of guys, oh, you tore your meniscus, whoosh, just take it out. I mean, pretty soon you got no meniscus.
Yeah, so, and some let it. I tore the meniscus in my knee in jiu-jitsu and had the MRI, the whole thing. They said, yeah, you have the tear, but in the spot that it's in, we think the blood flow is good enough. It'll heal.
Let it heal.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the problem is blood flow there. And that's why they do that condyle drilling where they'll try to, you know, generate you know, some growth there because, you know, it's just not a very well, what do you want to say, irrigated area as far as your blood goes. So, sorry,
yeah,
I'm thinking about doing my lawn.
You and your lawn, my goodness, it just infiltrates your conversation.
Well, you know, now I'm obsessed with it because the T-Mobile, you know, sitting out there looking at the T-Mobile park.
Dave sits there with envy, looking longingly at the field going.
I know you're not supposed to be envious, but It's one of the nine deadly sins.
Well, it's on display anytime we're at T-Mobile Park. I see you gazing out at the field, watching those guys do their work, going, I wish I could be them. But people were confirming what I said, that Lewis's injury was at a play at the plate when he was in Everett, sliding into home plate and blew the knee up. So we'll see what goes on with that. I mean, obviously, we're hoping for the best, and it doesn't need surgery and all of that good stuff. Coming up, more fans acting inappropriately at NBA games. We'll hear that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Well, we did just hear from John earlier that the Rams are probably not a likely place for Julio Jones to go, but don't tell that to Mike Greenberg. He is very excited because if the Rams get Julio, shockingly, he thinks they're the NFC favorite.
I would argue that if he winds up with the Rams, they might actually challenge Tampa as the favorite in the NFC. You know I love the Rams. I've already told you I love that defense. I'd like to see them make that playoff run last year with a healthy Aaron Donald. He was a shell of himself in that playoff game against Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. I'd like to see that game again, and I would certainly like to see it if Matthew Stafford is their quarterback.
Ah, the great Matthew Stafford, one of the elite, as we've heard. It's amazing how much there's. I'm telling you, Dave, they are putting a lot of expectation on this guy. And he may feel it. He may press. He may feel a sense that I've got to live up to all this hype. Now all of the commentary surrounding the Rams is about, oh, well, now that they've got this guy, the sky's the limit. And he's really the key to a Super Bowl victory. And I don't know. I think he's very good. I think he is an upgrade over Goff. I don't think he's elite.
I don't think I've ever felt this way, and I'm still not quite sure if it's for real, about a coach. And Brandon Staley, and so Greenberg talks there about their defense and how good they are. Yeah, they were really, really good last year. The year before that, they were like middle of the road in pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. 2020, and they always have been. They've been fantastic with Aaron Donald, and I'm talking about the Rams, of course, Jalen Ramsey. But in 2020, they were number one in pretty much every category defensively. That guy's gone.
And they've lost a couple of members of that secondary as well.
Yeah, Johnny Johnson is gone, and
Hill.
I know they have. Right? Yeah, Troy Hill. I've always really liked. So, I just am finding all kinds of good reasons to tear down the Rams. Hopefully, they're terrible this year. But yeah, I don't know. Just does Julio Jones? I don't know. Check me here. I've always really respected Julio Jones, and just thought, or as some people call him, Julio. I think he's like the gold standard in receivers over the last decade or so.
6'3", 220.
Yeah, but he just doesn't, going into his 11th year, it just doesn't strike fear in your heart anymore as much as it used to. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to make the difference. And then, like you said, Matthew Stafford, boy, lots of pressure on him.
Well, Rob Domofsky, who covers the Packers for ESPN's NFL Nation, says if it comes down to Aaron Rodgers only playing if the Packers get rid of Gutekunst, their GM, he said, well, he's not going to be very happy because there's no way the Packers get rid of a GM who's been this successful.
Sure any organization Gutekunst would ever just fire a general manager who's put together a roster that's gone 26-6 the last 2 years and has been in the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. And the other thing, I think it sets a really bad precedent for players, being able to dictate it. Now, look, there's different rules for different players, yeah. And Aaron Rodgers probably feels like he's earned that right. But I just don't think that the way the organization operates, they would ever choose a player over the general manager who has built the team to what it is now.
Oh, I don't know. You might take Aaron Rodgers over Gutekunst.
Well, I would, but maybe they look, and maybe it's about his age and how much longer is he going to be functioning at this level. I mean, he's coming off a brilliant season. He was the MVP. Is the expectation that he falls off a cliff in the next season or two, that they're going, okay, long run, we're better off with this GM than this quarterback? I don't know. It's an interesting – if he's 26 years old coming off that season, you're going, you're out of your mind. Gutekunst, you're out. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a no-brainer, but – maybe at this age, they're thinking, all right, this isn't going to be the way he plays year in, year out. We're better off.
I wonder if I'm deceived by Aaron Rodgers just because he makes it look so easy. I think more than any player, he is somebody that makes it look easy to play quarterback. More than Tom Brady, more than Patrick Mahomes. There's just something about him. But, yeah, he is getting on in age. I don't know. It seems like, do we hear a whole bunch of complaining about Gutekunst or Goody, whatever they call him there, from the other players?
Not that I've heard.
I've not heard anything about how, oh, Green Bay is a terrible organization to deal with. It's only from Aaron Rodgers. And if Clayton's right, sometime in September, they'll end up trading him to the Denver Broncos. But in the meantime, you know, I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback.
Can you imagine if the Broncos land that, Aaron Rodgers heads to Denver, and they go and win a Super Bowl like they did with Peyton? They get two guys at the end of their career that are two of the greats to ever do it, and they ride them in, they ride the coattails into a Super Bowl win.
And the whole thing about Elway is always in Denver that he can't find the right quarterback. Well, if he found it, you know, he had two trips with Peyton Manning, went one for two, and then if they get it with Aaron Rodgers, he'll be a genius.
So there was yet another incident involving fans at an NBA game. This one, the Wizards and the 76ers. Yesterday, a fan runs onto the court, and luckily he didn't go run at a player, maybe for his sake or the player's sake. He just ran out there to the other hoop. He was promptly taken out. But after the game, Russell Westbrook said basically just, calm down, fans. You're at a game. Just sit there and enjoy it.
This is our job. You know, this is not a game or some shit. You can just kind of just do whatever you want to do and run around and come do whatever. This is our job. Like, we take our job very seriously. It may look fun, entertaining, but it is our job, and we take it very seriously. So I think as fans, just my advice is just to be watch the game, enjoy it, and sit back, whatever, and that's it.
He's not wrong. Yeah, I don't know why people feel so entitled to act like a crazy, insane screwball out there. I'm gonna throw things. I'm going to run onto the court. Do you see the guy?
Alcohol.
It must be it. It's got to be it. And the guy got tackled. You didn't use the play-by-play I sent you last night. I think it was Marv Albert and Reggie Miller.
Yeah, yeah.
Or was it Harlan?
It was too short, I thought, right? Or was it? I didn't hear the full version then.
Yeah, we'll it was on the article. Anyway, there was play-by-play of the guy getting tackled, which I thought was kind of funny.
Did they do a good job with it?
Yeah, like, it was pretty funny.
Remember Kevin Harlan when he did the cat running in?
Yeah.
And then the streaker.
This guy, I don't know what this guy was trying to do. I don't know if he was just going to go out there and try to be funny or something, but he got tackled right at the baseline.
Yeah.
He's down on the ground. And all I could think of was that line from Hangover when they tased him. In the face!
Yeah.
Tase these guys. Teach them a lesson. You make it prohibitive. Make them a little nervous about what could come if they, you know, cross that kind of line.
I just saw a thing on a Football Life with Mike Ditka, and he took a guy out in the Coliseum, I think it was. And it's funny because he ended up hitting the guy who was, you know, running around like a crazy man, and he took out a cop.
Oh, did
he? Or a security guy that was running behind him. So he blasted both of them. You know, he blasts the fan into the police officer.
Ah, it's like a bowling pin effect.
Yeah, and it was a pretty big hit. But, like, he took the one of his teammates was like, he was in the huddle or something. He's like, hold on a minute, guys. And then left and went. And, you know, you call that a freebie. It's
yeah.
a free shot.
Did you ever have anybody run on the field when you were out there?
No.
Wouldn't you be tempted? Maybe you wouldn't pull the trigger on it, but wouldn't you be tempted just to freight train somebody?
I don't know. I might have. Here's the one thing. If the guy happens to be a decent athlete and you go chase him and he puts a move on you, you're going to look really,
that's
really
bad.
That's
what would stop you from doing it. Is he might make me look bad.
If he got me,
he jukes you.
If he got close to me, I'd stick my arm out and clothesline him or something like that. But if the guy has some talent, you're going to never live that down.
Yeah, there's Dave's jock strap right there on the field, and that guy's just trucking it to the end zone.
I'd say, go ahead, have your fun. You'll get tired.
That's so good. All right, this happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley joining us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.